The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you, who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JP Morgan Chase NA member FDIC 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Co.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Pushkin. Not too long ago, I had a situation out in nature. It was during a hike at a wildlife refuge with my dog Davy and my girlfriend Hannah. Davy was off leash, bounding through the trees, following her dum-dum hound dog Nose. All of a sudden, the dog tore past me with something hanging from her mouth. If you have a dog, you will be familiar with this move. The dog knows she probably shouldn't have the thing that's in her mouth, but she's so proud of her quarry, she can't help but show it off. As Davy was running by me, she slowed down just enough so I could see what was in her mouth. It was a squirrel. Now, as long as I have had Davy, catching a live animal has been the dream of her life. But because rodents, birds, butterflies, and bees are all way faster than her, she's never fulfilled her great aspiration. When I saw the lifeless animal flopping in the dog's mouth, I shrieked and yelled at Davy to drop it, which she did immediately because she is a very good girl. As the squirrel fell from Davy's chops, I realized something terrible. The squirrel was alive, but barely. And that is when our hike took a very sad turn. You're listening to The Loudest Girl in the World, who I believe I've proven irrefutably and beyond all doubt is me, Lauren Ober. The Loudest Girl in the World is a show about finding yourself broken in a pretty dark place and emerging from that place a mostly glued back together person. And in our final episode, I guess I need to find a way to make that happen. I need to become whole here, or almost whole anyway. If it hasn't been made abundantly clear in the past 8 episodes, I have very big feelings. I wander through the world as if my first layer of very pale skin is missing. All of my nerves are just hanging out exposed, waiting to be set off by a spiky dog hair stuck in my bra, or the Harley Davidson exhaust rumble, or the sight of a helpless, injured squirrel, which is what happened on our hike. The second I saw the squirrel lying on the trail, struggling to move, its leg obviously broken, I lost it. I collapsed in a flood of wails. I had enough sense in the moment to grab the dog's collar so she didn't do more damage to the injured creature, but that was all the control I could muster. I squatted down on the trail, paralyzed by sobs. It felt like I was weeping for ages. I just couldn't stop. The episode wasn't a total shock to Hannah. She had once seen me break down in the middle of a street in Savannah when I saw a sweaty, swayback draft horse pulling a cart full of equally sweaty tourists around. She knows that animals in distress, or animals being mistreated, or old animals, or unwell animals, tend to elicit an outsized emotional response in me. But still, this was a lot. After many minutes, I was able to compose myself to walk away from the situation, but not before telling Hannah that the squirrel needed to be put out of its misery. It would suffer and ultimately meet a gruesome end if we didn't do something. Or more accurately, if Hannah didn't do something, because it was only us in those woods. To this day, some months later, I still don't know if Hannah eased the squirrel over the Rainbow Bridge. I just know that when we passed that same spot on the trail later in our hike, the squirrel had been released from its earthly body. Journey mercies, little friend. The thing about autistic meltdowns, these immense responses to emotional overload, is that they are displays of primal, unadulterated feeling. They are raw emotions, often stripped of words, meaning, and context. They are pure and uncorrupted. Though from the outside, that's not at all what they look like. To an observer, my meltdown state would most likely appear unhinged, maybe even deranged. And I don't like that one bit. After Squirrel Strife 2022 happened, I talked to my new therapist about it. Her name's Sandra, and a big part of her practice is dedicated to autistic women and girls. So she is not unfamiliar with the nature of the meltdown. Our conversation was a real turning point for me in terms of embracing my own feelings.
So what is it like to walk through the world feeling these really strong feelings that can get ignited so easily?
That's Sandra, obviously.
Well, who wants that? No one, right? I mean, because then you are dysregulated.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not fun.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just affect you. It affects the people who you are close to. It probably prevents you from being close to other people mm-hmm. because it's like too much.
Yeah. And so here you are having all these feelings. And then on top of it, you feel like you push away the people that you really care about, or that there's a disconnect. They don't understand what's happening with you. And then you feel like you're left with this feeling and what sounds like to me like almost like shame.
Oh, it's massive shame. Massive, massive.
Right. Mm. And you are wired in such a way that when you experience that emotion, you almost become like flooded by it. And so what happens is that you experience that, and then all of a sudden there's this internal critic inside of you who then tells you you're not supposed to feel that way, you're not supposed to respond that way. There's this whole narrative that's very shaming. And to walk through life like that is so dismissive. It's like a whole secondary pain tacked on top of how you actually feel. And I'm wondering, what would it be like to give yourself some grace and to say that?
How do you do that? I don't know how to do that.
Right. And that's what we're here to work on.
Why don't you just tell me the answer? I'm serious. Like,
what would it be like? What would it be like if you lived in a world where there was permission to have those feelings? Then how do you think that would also impact your feelings, the output itself? I think that part of our time together is trying to integrate this with your diagnosis, a sense of a new identity and being able to see yourself through that lens will give you more grace to be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm sort of wishing for you.
Which is a very lovely thing for anyone to want for you. the ability to be unequivocally yourself. But rather than sit with that kindness, I instead corrected Sandra when she mispronounced a word, because that's the kind of jerk I am.
And you're having this narrative inside yourself that's shaming and castigizing yourself. And so when...
Chastising
yourself, yeah.
Or castigating.
Yeah. Somewhere in between. It was a combination of those two words together.
It was a portmanteau. I don't mean to correct you, but I'm just...
No, but I appreciate it.
I doubt that. But ultimately, Sandra's right. I do need to have grace about my big feelings. Because big feelings are an autistic gift. One of the biggest misunderstandings about autistic people is that we are robots devoid of emotion. And that is just patently false. Most autistic people actually have a glut of emotion, so much so that often the pipelines and pathways to express that emotion get clogged up. Sometimes the right emotion doesn't come out at the right time. And sometimes no emotion comes out at all because it's just too big, like a giant emotional hairball. In this final stage of reckoning, I'm trying to be okay with all the big feelings I put out into the world. I'm trying to give myself permission to feel. But before I can truly be at ease with my brain and embrace the deluxe emotions it generates, I need to do one big thing. I have to apologize. I have to take accountability for the way my big feelings impacted someone else. And to do that, I have to go visit my ex-partner, Becca. You met Becca in the last episode. She offered to be my phone-a-friend after I revealed my diagnosis to my family.
It will probably be hard, or their reactions make you feel bad. You can just call me.
Becca and I dated for 6 years and lived together in Vermont for 4. And even though we split up a decade ago, we've stuck around in each other's lives because we're family. And because she can't seem to get rid of me. Becca is easily the kindest person I know. When we were together, she was always doing little mitzvahs, like driving our elderly, not all their neighbor, to pick up cat food at the pet store. Becca is the type of person who politely listens to a political canvasser's whole sidewalk spiel, whereas I rudely walk past without giving them a second glance. No, I do not have a minute for the environment, sir. Before Becca and I moved in together, neither of us had lived with a partner. So already our cohabitation was going to be an adventure. Also, we were young in gay years, late 20s, early 30s. So we were kind of primed for a little drama. Or maybe it was just me. Becca's not naturally a fighter, and I always have my fists half-cocked, figuratively. When we shared a home, I would freak out about things that would seem like no big deal to someone else. And I felt like I had no ability to control those freakouts. Exhibit A. One time I went out of town and Becca rearranged some furniture. When I came back, I was a total junk show. I just couldn't handle the change. Another time, I remember a vigorous debate on the merits of Becca's supernumerous coffee mug collection, which ended with one of us in tears, not me. For years, I felt wretched about all that. The yelling and the crying and the totally blown out of proportion reactions. But it's only recently, in the wake of my autism diagnosis, that I have fully been able to process my behavior throughout our relationship. And what I've come to understand is that if only I had the information then that I have now, our life together would have been fewer landmines and more clearly understood needs. There would have been more open lines of communication and less misunderstanding. And I definitely wouldn't have lost my marbles over mugs. Before I could move on with my cool new autistic life, I had to talk to Becca about all of this. I had to be accountable. If I didn't, what would I have learned from all of this? So, after the break, I hop on a plane to see Becca in Atlanta. Sort of an explanation/apology tour. Huh. I should have had t-shirts printed for the occasion.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you, who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakeables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member, FDIC, copyright 2024. JPMorgan Chase & Co.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
When you are me, the flying experience is less than enjoyable. Not because I'm scared of flying, because I'm not, but because the sheer crush of people flying to and fro means there are a whole lot of things you can't control. To wit,
the guy sitting next to me in the terminal must have put hand sanitizer on his hands 52 times in 5 minutes, just rubbing his hands over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And I felt bad for him, but also I wanted to punch him.
See what I mean?
Main cabin one, boarding for Atlanta.
Sadly, I was not flying on Air Autismia, and the pilot was not Captain Autismo, though he did sound an awful lot like him.
We're trying to find him. A smooth ride for you as best as we can. Thanks for joining us. Once again, welcome aboard.
When I landed, Becca was there to pick me up, with her dog Disco in tow, who momentarily forgot how much she actually loved and missed me.
Hello.
How did you get here so fast?
I was waiting for you. Oh, sorry about her rudeness.
Becca lives and works in one of my favorite cities, Atlanta. My trip this time was brief, so we mostly just had time to eat at exceptional breakfast spots, I love grits, walk her dog, and talk about why she still doesn't own a real sofa at 43 years of age. On my last morning there, I pulled out all my recording equipment and we got into the real reason for my trip. It made me anxious to be accountable. It's hard to admit when you've been kind of sucky. But Becca was a safe person to do that with.
Okay, are you comfortable there?
Mm-hmm.
Relatively comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh my God, your dog's looking at me
if
like,
I move around a little bit and shift, is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, unless you like walk out of the room.
No, but I might just need to like move my butt onto a different cheek or something.
Oh boy. Where are we right now?
Are we starting?
We started like 10 minutes ago.
Oh, where are we?
Yeah.
We're in my house in Atlanta.
So where are we specifically right now?
We're in the main sitting area. I'm on a futon and you're on a beanbag chair.
And how old are you?
I don't see how that's relevant.
I mean, I'm just wondering, like, what type of people have futons and beanbag chairs?
Well, I am planning to get an actual sofa.
Actual sofa.
But I'm going to keep my beanbag chair for the reading nook.
For the what? The reading nook.
Yes.
Okay, well, clearly I didn't fly all the way down to Atlanta from D.C. to talk to Becca about her interior design. We had some business to attend to. But first, we had to take a brief detour down memory lane. We talked about how we met, which was on a group bike ride when we both lived in Vermont.
It was supposed to be a mountain bike ride, but we couldn't do a mountain bike ride because it was rainy, so we ended up on a road bike ride.
Then we talked about dating and why we were drawn to each other.
Why did you want to go out with me?
Well, you were...
Apart from my stunning good looks.
I absolutely loved your sense of humor. I had just never enjoyed being around someone that made me laugh so much.
And we talked about our decision to move in together, which was a first for both of us.
I guess I don't remember the moment when we made that decision.
I don't either, because I feel like it wasn't so much significance. It was like, oh, your lease was up.
And I think it was like,
I didn't like living in like my place. It was very, it felt very practical.
It was lovely to amble down the old lane of memories with Becca, but that wasn't what I was there to do. We had to get into some hard stuff.
I definitely have a lot of recollections of like when things were not so easy. And they're generally because of me. But I wonder if you have, like, recollections, and don't worry, you won't hurt my feelings, about, like, things that were, like, not easy or challenging or whatever.
The things that I remember being difficult were, had to do with, like, cleaning or maybe things that I did that would bring up something really intense for you, specifically, like, I don't think you were a messy person. I just think, like, maybe there were, like, bits of paper lying around or...
What were they called?
Yeah, what did I call them?
No, there was just one word. Your piles.
Oh, yeah, you had piles. And then, but sometimes there were, like, little shreds of paper.
They
like
were.
Trash.
I would put I would put all of my notes
that I needed
on scraps of paper.
Yeah, so there were some scraps and things that I cleaned up behind you. That didn't go over so well often. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, in retrospect, I should have handled that differently. But
handled what?
Well, just if there was something that you were doing that I wanted, that bothered me, to just talk to you about it.
Okay, just.
We were just getting going on our chat, so Becca wasn't quite emboldened to tell the full story. Basically, my organizational system at the time was little piles of scrap paper. I don't know why, but that's just how I kept my life organized. And for Becca, that was dysfunctional and created lots of clutter. So she would gather up all the piles into one master pile. And predictably, I would lose it. Yelling, pouting, a whole panoply of outsized emotional responses. Becca moving my piles was like Becca snuffing out my humanity. I don't mean to be dramatic, but that's how it felt at the time. And I know Becca didn't want to say it, but a person like that is not easy to live with. The piles weren't the only cleaning issue we had.
Well, I remember, like, I did all of the cooking.
Yeah.
Mostly. And it was vegetarian cooking. And that was okay.
Mm.
So then I really was hoping you would have cleaned the kitchen, which you did sometimes.
But you wanted it to be done
right away.
And my feeling was, Well, whether it gets done tonight or tomorrow morning, what does it matter? I thought you were going to say when you said that you largely cook vegetarian, that the time that you made meat in the pots when I was like away and I had like a full blown meltdown.
Okay, basically, I'm a strict vegetarian. Becca is not. One time I came home from a trip and realized that while I was away, she had been cooking meat in our shared cookware, which in my mind was verboten.
I can't remember a specific time that you did that, though. Did you?
Oh,
like
it was
when
bad.
I cooked meat while you were gone.
But it was because it was the first time and I had a full-on meltdown about it. Like, we had a massive fight. It's such bad behavior and it's so gross to recount now. Like, I'm embarrassed. But I was so upset that there would be any kind of animal product in a thing that would later be used to make food I would eat. It was more like the principle was so upsetting and I couldn't move away from that position.
Looking back, your reaction was so strong and emotional and overblown, you know, we both would say. And I didn't understand how seemingly out of your control it felt about like foods in general, because, you know, we had other instances. there was this dish that I often made. It was like a Puerto Rican bean and pumpkin stew, and capers were an ingredient in this dish, and it was vegetarian. I loved it. I knew you didn't like capers, but I was like, I think that they'll just dissolve into the stew.
Editor's note, they did not.
So I put them in. I did not leave them out, not expecting the backlash that I received. Who knew the depth of emotion that could be triggered by the mere caper?
I mean, I'm laughing now, but it's like, I think I'm laughing through the embarrassment. I mean, I think that you're being very generous in your description of it, because basically, like, again, like, full, like, meltdown mode. But
in this situation, I need to pop in and explain that my reaction was disgusting. A caper caught my eye on my spoon, and I asked Becca what it was. She told me flat out, it's a caper. And then I screamed at her for purposely putting capers in, even though she knew I didn't like them. I grilled her about why she had done such a thing, and I would not stop yelling until I got all my stress out. Remember, I am a fighter when it comes to fight, flight, or freeze.
Yeah, and I don't think I'd ever seen you respond like that before to anything related to food. But I wonder, I wish that I could go back and ask myself if, like, I had a moment where I was like, this isn't personal. Like, this isn't about me. There's something going on with Lauren. This is real. This is, her feelings are real. It's not like, yeah, she just doesn't like the caper.
But I think part of my reason for wanting to talk to you, that like I'm coming to understandings about my own behavior and, you know, things that sort of have set me off and the reasons why and how that manifests itself. And again, this is not like me trying to absolve my behavior, but I want to explain to you kind of where I think this fits, which is that it's when the hypersensitivity kicks in or the stimulus is too much, like the response is like this feeling of like everything feels so out of control. It feels like there's like full on like rage at the thing that created the stimulus or the overstimulus or whatever.
There were other instances that I wanted to apologize for. That time when we almost broke up painting the bathroom a new color. Many autistic people, myself included, do not like change. Or then there was the time when I made Becca cry by yelling at her to walk faster because we were going to be late to a concert. Some autistic people struggle with executive functioning, which can create overwhelming anxiety around timing. The time I threw her wallet out the window of my car while we were driving? Yeah, I don't think that has an autistic explanation. That just seems like I was being an asshole.
I think where the rub is like not understanding the origin of the emotion and then not understanding how to manage the emotion after that. And that is very hard because you were and continue to be a person who I love and care about a great deal. And also somebody who was always good in being thoughtful and taking care of me. And to treat somebody like that is really sort of repugnant. Do you need anything from me in terms of like more of an explanation or an apology or an atonement or anything about temper, bad behavior, bad reactions, that or anything that like made you feel particularly bad about yourself? Or
I mean, no, I don't need, and you know, even I get that you're, without saying that you're sorry or apologizing, you are. I mean, I know that that's how you feel. I don't need you to say.
No, I am sorry. I apologize.
I know. I think you said it, but I also feel it. And I think I would have felt it even if you didn't have this diagnosis and were taking on this project and making all these realizations.
I want to be really clear here. I was not asking Becca for forgiveness. I wanted to explain my behavior, not excuse it, using this new lens of neurodivergence. I needed to take accountability without teetering into a shame spiral or getting all self-hatey. The more I am able to unpack my big feelings of the past, the more I am able to manage future situations without crying or shouting or losing my mind, and the more compassion I am able to have for myself. We had to wrap up our chat. Disco the dog was losing her patience, and there wasn't much left to say.
Oh, no, I think I just, like, look forward to learning more about it. Now, I think now, like, since then and moving forward, like, I'm definitely going to leave the capers out of the stew. It's just not, like...
I left Atlanta feeling lighter than I arrived. I accomplished what I set out to do. Not just with Becca, but with all of it. There just wasn't really anything left to do on the autism front. I found a doctor and got evaluated. I got my education on and read all the books. I told my friends and my family. And I began seeing an autism competent therapist. Seemed to me it was time to just live, to fully inhabit my autistic self and all the jumbo emotions that come with it. It was time to step out of the box that Miss Patterson put me in all those many years ago and step into a kinder, more expansive way of thinking about myself and my feelings. But that doesn't come naturally to me. I might need a little help on that front. So, after the break, the lead singer of the Grammy-nominated band Big Thief comes to my aid.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you, who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakeables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC, copyright 2024. JPMorgan Chase & Co.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
When I was in the middle of making this project, almost a year after I got my diagnosis, a friend of mine asked if I might be interested in house sitting. She lives in the far west Texas town of Marfa, known for its ultra-cool art scene and mystery light phenomenon. So, of course, I said yes. Your girl needed a rest. And what better place for a very fair ginger to do that than the largest desert in North America? One evening during my Marfa stay, I hopped in my rented Ford Escape to catch the sunset on a precipitous canyon road near the Mexico border. The scenery was unlike anything this devoted East Coaster had ever seen. The canyons and the hills shimmered with luminous reds and golds, and the rolling ranch land was just miles and miles of undulating green. As the sunset changed the sky from a soothing blue to an opalescent purple, I put on an album. Christmas Eve, your mother insists. Songs by Adrian Lenker. It's the 2020 solo release from the lead singer of the indie rock band Big Thief. A sort of lo-fi breakup slash pandemic record. And it just kind of fit my driving mood. Three songs in, during a track called Anything, I just lost it. Big, fat tears dropped from my eyes, and I couldn't see the ribbon of gravel road ahead of me. I was overcome.
I'm driving to see the sunset in a canyon. A friend told me that it was worth going to see, and so that's what I'm doing. And I felt like I needed to pull over because I was driving in this extremely beautiful landscape, like unlike anything I've ever seen in my life. Like, and it just like struck me because I feel so moved by the scenery, and also feel so sad about how I felt about myself for so long. You know, I've just been holding on to so much pain with regard to my diagnosis. You know, I feel like for 43 years I've never gotten any relief about how I feel different than other people or incapable of certain things that other people are capable of.
As I was driving and listening to that album, I remember being struck by the fact that Adrienne seemed to be so in control of her feelings and had such easy access to them. Her understanding of herself and her emotions seemed effortless, loving.
Listening to this music, thinking like, there's just the beauty of it and how she was able to express what she wanted, and I can so very infrequently do that. I just feel very moved and also very sad about all of this pain. And I just want to find a way to let it go and to move on. And also, I want to know what the hell a ranch is. Like, I haven't seen a cow once, and I've been driving for an hour, and there are no cows. I don't know. I just want to feel better.
That drive was profound. The setting, the music, the fact that I saw a whole herd of pronghorned antelope bounding across open ranch land, it was an unlocking of sorts for me, a cracking open. And on the drive back, after the sunset, I kept thinking that Adrian, the singer, could help me. Maybe if I talked to her, I could learn better how to deal with the emotions that draped over me like an oversized sweater. Like, she could help me honor the grande feelings and the vulnerability that comes with them. It was a silly flight of fancy.
Should I start recording now? Or
okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, that's great.
Well, maybe it wasn't that silly.
Like, that kind of emotion is so hard for me to find or to access or to touch. It feels dangerous, also kind of wild and scary. You know, I wanted to chat for our show because it felt like there was a way in which you figured it out.
I think that sadness, emotion, you know, feeling things like deeply is not, it's not really nurtured. Like, we're not really given the tools from an early age. There's already so much stifling that happens. And I just think that there's so much around feeling your raw feelings and emotions that is just like oppressed. Like, it's no wonder that in this world, it's scary to emote and like feel the full rawness of feeling.
Like, you figured out how to access an appropriate amount of emotion and vulnerability. So that's, I think, my wonder is that I'm just so curious about how you get there.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
I guess just being able to be like, you know what? I'm going to be there for myself no matter what. And like, the sadness is not bad. The emotion is not bad. Like, all that I am is not bad. It can all be here, and like, honestly, just a lot of like self-soothing and trying to like believe in good, believing in like love, believing that love is a real force, that it's a real thing, that I really am surrounded with it and made out of it.
To do that, Adrian said she conjured the best friend she could imagine for her little self.
But I just imagine that person just being like, come here. Like, I love you so much. You're so special. I'm with you. I'm not going anywhere. And you can feel all you feel. And you can be all you are. And it's powerful. Like, you're amazing. Like, I love you, sweetheart. I'm here.
Listening to Adrian, I want to be this type of friend to myself, too. To give myself permission to feel big and to love the parts of me that seem extra. But after nearly a lifetime spent trying to tamp all that down, the idea felt overwhelming, even dangerous.
You know, like, I'm not saying that that's something I've mastered by any means. That's the kind of friend to myself that I want to be. Like, I want to be just so steadfastly sticking by my own spirit. And so when all that emotion comes out, that's honestly what got me through, is just time and time again, coming to a point of like, this can all be here and it's okay. And like, you can feel this all. I can feel it all. It's not too much. It just is, you know? And yeah.
And if all else fails, just strum out some notes on your guitar with a paintbrush from the hardware store. That's what Adrian does.
I can show you if you want.
Yeah, yeah, please. I'd love to see it.
Thank you.
I've been thinking a lot about my chat with Adrian as I write this show. And I've come to the understanding that making this project, inhabiting the mantle of the loudest girl in the world, is my gift to myself. I am being the friend that I need. I am, in Adrian's words, sticking by my own spirit. But now, me and autism and sixth grade Pippi Longstocking, we just need to go live a little. We're going to bust out of that dumb cardboard partition and we're going to give our big emotions an even bigger squeeze. Because no one puts Pippi in a box. As I write these very words, I am sitting at a table on my mother's porch in a suburban cul-de-sac just outside of Pittsburgh. Of course, this is not how I envision this project drawing to a close. I figured for the final episode, I would take myself on a writing retreat to some idyllic wooded haven in New England, or some fancy Northern California spread overlooking the Pacific. There, I would no doubt find the perfect ending for this story, one that would wrap all the emotions and epiphanies into a lovely little cadeau of meaning. This ending would be poetic, maybe even romantic. An elegant disquisition on difference, acceptance, and compassion. Instead, I am dog-sitting my mother's ridiculous party poodle, who won't stop barking in my face. In the tree next to the patio, there's a squirrel aggressively grooming its nether regions. Oh, and I have COVID, which has temporarily left me with the lung capacity of a nonagenarian with emphysema. A most unceremonious end to a project all about discovery and revelation, struggle and affirmation. But in a way, it's fitting, because even though I learned so much about myself and my neurology, and even though I'm working towards embracing who I am, and even though I was able to get it all out in a podcast, so maybe other people, maybe you, wouldn't feel so alone in your brain, the dogs still need to be taken out, the COVID still needs to be nursed, the mail still needs to be brought in. Real life doesn't stop for your big news or your big feels. In the end, my autism diagnosis means everything and nothing. It has manifestly changed my life, and yet I am exactly the same. And maybe that's just as well. You've been listening to The Loudest Girl in the World. It's hosted, written, and executive produced by me, Lauren Ober. Our senior producer is Ryder Alsop. Our associate producer is David Ja. Sophie Crane is our showrunner and senior editor. Jake Gorski is our mix engineer. Music composed by my autistic Kiwi pal, the inimitable Lady Hawk. Our artwork was created by the autistic illustrator, Loretta Ipsum. The show was fact-checked by Andrea Lopez-Cruzado, and our autism consultant is Sarah Caput. Our executive producers are Mia Lobel and Lital Molad. Much appreciation to Josh Lindgren at CAA and Bianca Grimshaw at Granderson Des Rochers. Also, a great many thank yous to the ridiculously talented Kevin Zach for all the voices and to number one head shrinker Sandra Wolf for putting up with me. And mega big love to the numerous people who shared their autism stories and expertise with me. Your insight and time is so appreciated. An offering of extreme gratitude to Sharda Balachandran Orihuela, Callie Cyrus, Molly Harris, Lulu Miller, Megan Reed, Laura Starcheski, Rob Quinn, Claire Thomas, Becca Van Dyke, Emily Vesseland, and my autism fairy godmothers, Donna Henderson and Sarah Whalen. I don't deserve your keen ears and your kind hearts. To my best guy, Jacob, thank you for making me all the better. And finally, Anna Rosen, whose boundless understanding, occasional teasing, and above all, love made this project possible. Ani ochevet otak. The Loudest Girl in the World is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus, offering bonus content and ad-free listening across our network for just $4.99 a month. What a deal. Look for the Pushkin Plus channel on Apple Podcasts or at pushkin.fm. To find more Pushkin podcasts, listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our executive team includes Jacob Weisberg, Malcolm Gladwell, Heather Fain, John Schnars, Carrie Brody, Carly Migliori, Christina Sullivan, Jason Gambrell, Lital Molad, Mia Lobel, and Greta Cohn. Our marketing team includes Eric Sandler, Maggie Taylor, Morgan Ratner, Nicole Morano, Mary Beth Smith, Jordan McMillan, Isabella Narvaez, and Sean Carney. We have operations support from Nicole Optenbosch, Maya Koenig, and Daniela Lacan. Thanks for listening, friend. I'm Lauren Ober.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.